I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times.
I was 14, 15. I didn't really care about what I was doing.
I would just go to school and I would just stay in the bathroom and walk through hallways and just won't go to class.
I was bad. I was like, I wasn't on task or nothing.
Being out in the hood and just standing on the corner doing things that are not good for you.
Always in the principal's office. I just made poor decisions. I hung out with the wrong people.
That's Tayana Taylor, Amanda Zeladon, Anthony Hackett, Amanda Soto, and Justin Williams, all students at El Centro de Estudiantes in the Kensington section of Philadelphia, being interviewed by Kevin McCrory for his podcast, Schooled. Last Chance High is the latest edition of Schooled, a portrait of El Centro, a high school for students who want to get their diploma after dropping out. They didn't make it in a traditional school for many reasons, including problems at home, traumas, poor life choices, learning challenges. El Centro gives them a second chance at an education by providing a casual, welcoming environment, close relationships with teachers, and a project-based curriculum. Now, nearly 20% of Philadelphians between the ages of 16 and 24 are not in school, and they're not in the workforce. A high school diploma can be a ticket to a good job and a better life. Today on Radio Times, we talk about El Centro. We're going to meet a student, a teacher, and one of the founders. Kevin McCrory is with us, as he has been on other Schooled podcasts. He is the host of WHYY's School Podcast. He's also the editor of Keystone Crossroads. And we posted a link to his podcast on our Facebook page. You can listen to this and other editions of Schooled wherever you get your podcasts. They drop every Wednesday this August. And Kevin, nice to have you back with
us
on Radio Time.
Thanks so much to be here, Marty.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Ryan Rivera, former student at El Centro de Estudiantes. He works as a judge's assistant for the First Judicial District of Pennsylvania. He is featured in this podcast. Ryan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is Doug Cox. He is a teacher, although at El Centro they're called advisors. He's a math advisor at El Centro, also advisor for the school's chess club called the Dark Knights. Doug Cox, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here. Nice. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So where to begin? Kevin, let me begin with you. Why did you want to profile El Centro?
I've been covering education in the city for about 6 years now, and so often we write about the politics and the policy fights, and I really wanted in this season of school to get into some of the deeper questions about education. So, like, what's it all about? What do we really want at the end of the day for students to be able to learn and to be able to do? And El Centro opened their doors to me and gave me access to their advisors, to their teachers, to help to explore that question. And what was really compelling was that, you know, you have this group of students who did not make it, like you said, it didn't work out for a lot of different reasons in these other contexts. And it was an opportunity to explore why that was, what maybe is an indictment on those other systems for why that wasn't working, and also to see the real work of the faculty in this building grappling with what they can do to get people ready for the workforce or college or beyond or wherever they're going to go. And those struggles and those intimate stories of both the students and the teachers, I found really compelling, and we made it the first two episodes of the podcast.
It's a really good podcast. Let me turn to you, Doug Cox. You've been teaching at El Centro for a couple of years. You've taught in other schools as well. What is it like to teach there?
At El Centro, you really have a connection to the young people. It's important we speak young people's language. We meet them where they're at, and we also present a loving environment. A lot of the fact our students are dealing with a lot of trauma, truancy, different things that are facing them. So I started about 5 years ago at El Centro, and since then, you know, I've really liked their mission of real-world learning, the advisory model, where we get to know our students in a social setting. We actually meet as an advisory, make decisions like based on our advisory. You know, we also do real-world learning where students go out into the workforce and get a vital experience that they might need to be able to go into the workforce and be productive. And that's what we're trying to do, re-engage young people, that education is for you and that there are a number of different avenues for you to go through. And, you know, studies show that a lot of young people, when they're given someone that looks like them and can kind of relate to them, that they do much better. And I think a lot of the time, educational trauma, you know, not the fault of anybody in particular, but teachers used to live in the neighborhood. Teachers used to stop by, you know, so you'd knock on the door and be like, hey, what's going on? That was like compulsory when my mother was an educator and my parents are both educators. So I kind of followed that old school model of really get to know where my young people are coming from so I can actually do the best job that I can do.
I want to pick up on a bunch of things you said, but Ryan, let me get you in on the conversation. You are described in this school podcast as a real success story. And you had dropped out of school. You had trouble with the law. You were selling drugs. But it sounded like you had a kind of epiphany or a moment where you felt like, I can do better than this.
Yes, yes. So I would say I never dropped out of school. I took vacations or hiatus.
Long stretches of time.
Yeah, I never fully dropped out. I always went back. But the epiphany for me was at 18. It was my second arrest, my first arrest as an adult. I was selling drugs, but I wasn't a good drug dealer. And
because you got caught?
Because I got caught. And no, the officer who arrested me, his name is Carl. We're actually best friends now. Yeah. But he told me, he said, this isn't for you. This isn't. I could tell you right now by looking at you, this isn't for you. And he took the time to actually have a conversation with me while taking me to the district. And, you know, what he said to me resonated with me because I was like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm scared. You know, I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to be told what to do, you know, and I don't want my life to be affected by this mistake for the rest of my life.
You know, it's interesting, Kevin, going back to you, the podcast begins with a guy named Joshua Martinez, and in certain ways sounds a little familiar from what you just said, Ryan, which is, again, you know, a good kid trying to help his family, selling drugs, making some money, and sort of caught between these several different worlds.
Yeah, and I think the first few times I met Josh, you know, he was wrestling with this whole thing of, like, I'm trying to be different. I'm trying to do good for my family, for myself, trying to make myself better. At the same time, I'm struggling with, like, just paying the bills on a daily basis, and I'm trying to help my sister. And, you know, I got this job working at a packaged warehouse, essentially. And I'm going straight to that after school, and, you know, I'm earning a little bit of money, and it starts to press on me, like, hey, maybe I shouldn't go to school tomorrow. Or, you know, at the same time, I blow off a little steam. Maybe I play video games a little too late into the night, right?
You can't get up early in the morning to go to school.
Right, so he was supposed to graduate the end of last year, 2018, and you know, the advisory essentially said, no, you have to come back and really finish it and stick that out. And I think there was this question in his head whether or not he was going to do that. And I think Doug was instrumental in making sure he came back. And that was completely based on this relationship that they had, yes, academically, but through this chess club, through this, like, place where kind of Doug built this mythology around, hey, we're improving ourselves as a cohort, and, like, you can trust me.
Let me play another clip from a school, and this is the principal. There's going to be a new principal in just a couple of weeks, but this is the principal last year, El Centro Dijon de Shields. Is that correct?
Shields.
And he's discussing his strategy for making El Centro a different kind of supportive environment for his students.
If you are stepping into a space that most young people distrust off the bat, what do you need to sort of meet us halfway? And part of that is really that basic acknowledgement that you are a human being, you deserve much more than you've been given. We trust you, we see potential and promise in you. Just sort of giving that constant energy and intentionality, 10 times out of 10, will put a young person in a place where they're like, something is different here. Something is going to allow fertile ground for me to actually try this and be good at it.
One of the things you said, Doug Cox, is just how central relationships are at El Centro.
Yeah, and I could even go back to my time going to Central High School. I remember my chemistry teacher had on Timberlands and something specifically.
Timberland shoes.
Timberland, you know, boots that we used to wear back when I was a teenager. And that was like the first thing that I saw that was like, wow, like a teacher could be like me. And he looked like me. And that was the first time that, you know, I can remember only a few things from high school, but I can definitely remember that. So I believe that the relationships that you build are very important and can, like, get you into something. Now, my thing is, like, I want to find out what you want to do. You know, if you want to be a fireman, we could put you into a fire program. We have actually we have WH students that are doing podcasts for WHYY. You know, we have a lot of different partnerships in the community, but we need more. And we need more funding to pull off some of the things we're trying to do, like the experimental living aspect, which students go overseas and they actually study in like Honduras and other countries, Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. So we've had students go overseas in the alternative education program. That doesn't usually happen. And then my goal is to expose students to a lot of different STEAM activities.
Ryan, let me go back to you. When you were then a student there at El Centro, did it feel like a different environment for you? I mean, did it feel like this is a place where I can succeed?
Absolutely. I give you just a little bit of, you know, me going to public school, you know, middle school, elementary school. It was horrible. It was horrible for me.
Why?
Well, I feel like it was very generic. The teachers there taught from, you know, textbooks and from computers, like, hey, go on a computer and you look at this and then you answer questions about it at the end. It wasn't person to person, right? And when I got to El Centro, it was just a whole different world. Like, within my first month of going to El Centro, they took me out into the community and they made me a part of an art gallery show that they were doing. That was my first month at the school. I've never been exposed to something like that, you know? Going to public school, I just went to, you know, the same old trips, you know, the National Constitution Center, which is great. It's awesome.
Right across the street. Yeah,
it's cool. But I mean, I went to an art gallery opening at 14 years old, something that I was never thought about or never exposed to. You know, we went outside our community to other communities. We went and did community work that didn't feel like community work in other communities and in our community. Right. So it's a bunch of things that El Centro introduced me to that the traditional school didn't.
And just to clarify,
and to you,
there,
Kevin,
I just wanted to emphasize that El Centro is a public school, right?
Right.
It's a school that is an alternative program within the School District of Philadelphia's network. They have a contract with El Centro to run this program for this exact type of student clientele. Just want to emphasize that.
No, you're right. But it doesn't feel like a public school.
Right.
And it doesn't feel like an alternative school neither, because when you say, I've been to an alternative school beside El Centro, mm-hmm. and alternative to me means, you know, you're going to go in there and they're going to put hands on you, or they're going to tell you what it's going to be, how it's going to be, and you're going to take it like that, right? Because there were alternative schools like Daniel Boone or CEP. Mm-hmm. They were open up. Now, you know, they're closed, but I went to CEP when it was open. So alternative for me is like, it's a touchy word.
Interesting. Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Ryan Rivera, and he's featured in Kevin McCoury's new Schooled podcast. And the podcast is about El Centro de Estudiantes. It's a school for students who have struggled in regular public schools. And some of them are older than the typical high schooler. And it is part of a project that Kevin has been doing for some time now. And again, you can listen to that podcast via WHY. Also with us, Doug Cox. He is a math advisor and also advisor to the school's chess club. They don't use the word teacher at El Centro. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Stay with us. Much more after this short break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne talking with WHYY's Kevin McCoury about El Centro, the subject of the first of two episodes of Schooled that are dropping this month here at WHYY. You can listen to it as a podcast. Former El Centro student Ryan Rivera is with us, and current El Centro advisor Doug Cox with us as well. Let me play two more clips from Schooled. The first one is Dialize talking with you, Kevin, about remembering the day that her father was shot.
When you talk at length with almost any of the students, it's easy to get this impulse to be more forgiving of bad behavior.
And then I went outside, and then the cops is out there, the news and everything. So it was a lot.
Dialize Carroll's dad was a drug dealer. At 35, he was shot and killed on the block where the family lived. Dialize was 13. And vividly recalls the night of his death.
And then when I asked the cop who got shot, he was like, some big man, he's dead. And then I just started snapping, like, I knew that was my dad. Because he was big, and then they had the white sheet over him. And then I was like, is he going to make it? He was like, no, he's dead. Mm. Just like that.
Let me play another clip from Schooled. And this is Taylor Jabinski remembering her father, who developed a drug addiction after a back surgery and found him in her basement after he committed suicide.
You could have been either your best friend or your worst f-ing enemy. And it was more so the enemy part for me, but he wasn't always like that. He was a good guy at one point. It's just the whole illness thing took over him and made him f-ing bat and I didn't want to deal with it no more, and he just wound up killing himself a week after I moved out.
Doug, let me go back to you as someone who teaches at El Centro. Frankly, listening to those two students is just heartbreaking to think about what they've been through at such a young age. And we talk about sort of trauma and traumatic-based education. Help us understand how you deal with them, knowing what they have come to school with.
The first thing is definitely to keep your ears open first, not to judge a student. Why are you coming late? You may or may not know what's going on at the household. So sometimes my students come in at different times. But for me, I think the core of what happened to me at 16 was my mom passed away. And I really think that part of me fighting back and doing my education and continuing it, luckily it still graduated, but I kind of listlessly wandered through the rest of my high school experience. And I really believe that is where I can really relate to my young people, and the sense of everyday trauma coming in, to know that we have a little PTSD. We got a little, post-traumatic stress disorder. So a lot of the time students have been disrupted by these thoughts, and it's sort of like a ripple, kind of like a whirlpool. And you can't really see clearly to the core of yourself when you're dealing with these riptides that are kind of, washing you back and forth. So first and foremost, a non-judgmental approach is the first way that you can actually get some information and try to make an intercession into a young person's life.
Ryan, do you like the word trauma? I mean, do you feel like that applies to the students that you know? You're shaking your finger at me. Go ahead.
No, because I've been through similar situations. I always tell people when they ask questions about where I'm from, where I grew up, I tell them like this: what you've seen in movies, I've seen in real life, right? And for me, it's not trauma. It's not.
Your life. You mean
it's my life, and it just propelled me and made me into what I am today. And it also taught me, I don't want to go down that path. And I also, have to thank my mother for raising me, the right way, and not sheltering me from what was out there. I mean, mm-hmm. Not that she could if she wanted to, but also letting me know that what went on out there doesn't go on in the house, So for me, everything I've saw or everything I've been through, it isn't trauma. It's right. Just something that I took, learned from, don't want to do it again, or don't want to be a part of it, and we move on.
Kevin, this podcast raises a whole host of questions, which we'll get to, which is, what is a diploma if you're not, reading at 10th, 11th, 12th grade level, which we will get to. But it's clear, these are smart students.
Yeah,
they are smart.
Yeah, and I think you spend any time with students across this city, in schools that probably get written about in a very bad way. When you actually spend real time with people and you talk to them, there's just often an amazing kind of genius and emotional intelligence and so many other things that come across. And that really has been part of the big point of the Schooled podcast, is to get to those stories so that when we're talking about education policy and politics, we actually know what we're talking about. We know the kids that we're talking about. Yeah.
In fact, Ryan, in this podcast, you talk about the fact that, you're not so great in math. And, I don't want to put you on the spot here.
No,
but
it's fine.
But you're very honest about the fact. You say, I'm ashamed to say this, but I don't know my times tables. I only know my fives and tens, my ones, my zeros, like the easy stuff. But the hard stuff, that's the 8 times 8. And then you go on from there. And yet here you are. You've got a good job. You're working in the city.
I mean, I could give you a little bit more. I'm fine with being open about myself. I'm very comfortable with myself. I mean, I don't know how to write in cursive that well. Right. I can read cursive, but I can't write it that well. And I just chalk it up to, you know, the way the Philadelphia school district and in the way the Philadelphia school district runs their schools. You know, I remember being in middle school, and in sixth grade, that's when they taught us cursive. And it was only for about 6 months out of that year. And then that was it. We never went back to cursive. We never went back to cursive again.
Well, let me go back to you, Doug Cox, because it's your job to get these students through school, get them an education, get them a diploma.
Right. And to really intrinsically value education. And how do you do that with a student who may be an adult and may want to work and may understand the fact that, you know, the cost, you know, a balance of that, like if I go to school, I can't work. So you really have to make education tangible, and you have to let them know clearly what they're trying to learn and what's important about it. I believe there's a lot of different programming that we do that we can do better as far as like getting like first in math, getting programs that really get at some of the things that happen, because, you know, studies also show that kids disengage from math in fifth grade. So that's actually where it happens at. All right. So
middle school.
So you're dealing with mathematical trauma, and to really put it out there clearly, there's not a lot of African American math teachers, point blank, period. So there's a lot of cultural misunderstandings that can really be resolved quickly, that sometimes can get a student so-called blacklisted from a classroom or sent to the principal's office, when it's clearly like, hey, let me talk to you for a second over here. And I really, you know, believe that public shaming is not something that our young people do well at. And I really stress that fact in my classroom, not to call anybody out, but to, hey, let me hang back for a second. Let me talk to you real fast, because that's an important part of our culture that I think some people miss sometimes.
Talking just one-on-one, that
yeah,
kind
exactly.
of thing.
Not that putting people's information out there.
Yep.
Yeah, this whole debate over like standards and rigor, like it was very interesting to see how that played out in El Centro, partly because the previous season of school that I did, I spent, you know, more than a year in a mastery charter school, and this was an elementary school, so a little bit different. But what I saw there was this hyper vigilance on the idea that we need to expect these students who are disadvantaged to be able to perform in the same way that, you know, more advantaged, often whiter students are. And that's their laser focus, right? We can't take, right, no excuses. We can't take the idea that these kids are coming from a different situation and allow that to dictate some lower expectation. And now here you are in El Centro. It's a different population. The kids are older. It's a different space. And, you know, I would kind of actively wrestle with some of the advisors there and say, like, you know, I was in your class today, and A, not many people showed up, and B, like, it didn't seem like there was really that much academic happening. And you kind of had this push and pull of people saying, well, look, if I get really, you know, really tough on kids, they might just decide not to show up the next day. Hmm. They might decide not to come back to school at all. And what's better, a kid who sticks with it and gets a diploma, or a kid who never does?
There's a photo part of the school podcast of just that. I mean, a school where kids don't look like they're paying attention. I realize this. I'm looking at you, Doug. I realize this happens in schools all across the country, but it does. They look disengaged.
I think what you did see was a cohort on a Tuesday and Thursday. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm also a math advisor, so we didn't get a chance to maybe to film, you know, math cohort and things like that, and all the different cohorts that we have. So we have all four subjects that we teach. So that right there are the seniors getting together. So it is a little more relaxed on Tuesdays and Thursdays, just because people are kind of like easing in, and these are like they're culminating their work and things like that. So it is a big task for them, because they know they're going to be putting together their senior project. So it is a little bit, you do get anything you do big in El Centro, you do get a little bit of pushback, but definitely our young people must, you know, hit these standards that we hit them. Like, I teach Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, and I put that into, you know, my lessons. So I do, whether it's working with catapults, whether I'm working with origami and geometry, what I do with the curriculum is I approach it in a way where students can access it and see the reality of what mathematics is. Because they think a math person is someone who sits by a chalkboard and just moves chalkboards
back.
That was
my memory of math.
Exactly. I'm erasing and you're copying, erasing and copying. Yeah, you have to really bring math to life, and that's what Get Your Math Right is all going to be about, as I'm coming up with curriculum to re-engage students to ancient people of color who did mathematics. So this is you, and I really, they need to understand that, that it's not outside of yourself. So
let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. That's Doug Cox. He's a teacher, although at El Centro they're called advisor, a math advisor at El Centro, also advisor for the school's chess club, the Dark Knights. We'll talk about that. Ryan Rivera is a former student at El Centro and works now as a judge's assistant at the First Judicial District of Pennsylvania here in Philadelphia. And Kevin McCrory with us, host of WHYY's Schooled podcast, editor of Keystone Crossroads. And his latest podcast, which has dropped, as we say, is all about El Centro, which is a school for kids who have struggled in Philadelphia, school called El Centro de Estudiantes. You can call us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Ryan, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, if you could go back in time, right, and go to El Centro in 2010 and look at El Centro now, it has made drastic changes for the better. You know, I was at El Centro when I was 14 years old. I'm 24 years old now, and I still work with El Centro and also other schools. On my free time, I set up police forums throughout the city. So I go into other public schools and I see public high schools. And I see how some of those public high schools are ran just by communicating with the staff in those high schools. And not to say that they're bad, but compared to El Centro and, you know, what David Bromley and Judonda Shields have done, moving it in the right direction is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I always tell people that El Centro is the template for how you want to run your school. If you want to see how a school needs to be ran and, you know, work together as a community, El Centro is the place to go and study for that.
David Bromley will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. Let me play another clip from Schooled, and this is you, Doug, talking about chess and the chess club.
This is something that you have to work with a young man and give him constant reminders on the daily. You have to come into school and to stay on this path. Chess requires you to be consistent in your thought. So you have to be consistent in your thought as far as what you're going to do in the future and have a plan. You know what I mean? If you have no plan, the plan is going to be made for you.
Which is so interesting. We talk about grit. You know, that's one of the watchwords related to education these days. Right. Is that what chess is about in a sense?
Definitely. I've had young men who's been on house arrest that I've watched come off house arrest, went to state tournaments with an ankle monitor, was not worried about it, loved chess so much. That it really changed his life. And that's for a lot of other students that have been misdiagnosed as hyperactive. A lot of chess basically finds genius in our neighborhoods that's going undiagnosed. And I found a lot of talented young people through chess over the years. And, you know, the Dark Knights have been around for over 10 years. We've beaten schools like Masterman. We've beaten schools like Central Engineering and Science with kids from North Philly with hunger and desire and passion. So I know young people from our environment can do anything that they want to do, and I try to unleash the greatness of them. I got an award, a Benjamin Banneker Award, for unleashing the greatness from the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, unleashing the greatness of young people, and that's what I'm trying to do at El Centro.
Kevin.
With chess.
Sorry. Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. Schooled is about this school where some kids really do great, like Ryan. Mm-hmm. But also, as you say, a lot of kids, I mean, this is an opportunity, but they don't make it. You know, the attendance is...
Oh, right, sure. Know, okay. No, and, you know, in the cohort that I followed, you know, it started with 16 students and 12 made it, so four right. didn't. And some of those, I think, ended up graduating the next trimester, and some of them, I think, still aren't back as far as I understand it. And so, yeah, I think it's a continual struggle. I mean, you know, there's sometimes a school even that really has a family ethos that really tries to be a very welcoming environment, very loving, positive, supportive environment, that still sometimes is not going to be enough to overcome what people have gone through and are currently going through. So, I mean, that's kind of a fact of life, right?
And tough love, like we give out tough love, but you need to have a relationship with the students before you can give some tough love to a student. And I think some people think that I'm just going to come in here and I'm going to be students into something. You're not going to do that. You're going to have a relationship and like, can I teach you? Yes, you can. And can I, you know, really advise you? That's why we use advisor, because we take that power out of the word of teacher. And I'll advise you to do these certain things. And I'll talk to you outside of school. Like there's students that I do wraparound services with to this day. Like I know where he's at. I got to go out there and make sure my young man has an ID so that he can go ahead and get his job started. So these are the kind of things that we just don't stop when you graduate. We continue to work with you, and we want our young people to come back and show the way and give that voice to our young people about what they can do.
Tough love, Ryan. Yeah? Does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it works in a way. And, you know, to say to speak to what you were saying with about attendance in schools and stuff like that, I mean, I missed my whole last month of eighth grade, and I still graduated eighth grade.
Right.
So attendance is a struggle for the whole city of Philadelphia, right. Any school you go to.
And that would be a point I would emphasize, just to interject there, Ryan, sure. I'm sorry, is to say, like, the stuff we're talking about at El Centro, just it's happening in schools all across the city and across the state, right? This is not a symptom of a certain quote-unquote urban education. This is happening, and these are questions that are relevant in sure. schools across the country.
And the question is why? I mean, why children are not attending school and what to do about it? And as you were saying, Doug, shaming them is not going to work.
I'm a parent. Well, I'm a parent, too. So I have a daughter. So I know the direct approach sometimes with my daughter is not going to work. Sometimes I give her my coach because my other coach can talk to her and give it into her way that's not there. Because sometimes dad can be a little, you know, too little close to. And you have to understand the emotions of a young lady sometimes. So the coach can give it to her in a way that's not threatening. So that's why I feel like coaching is very important for our young people. And as far as them getting grades and getting on honor roll, that's something that I actually contact them about. Like, I send them screenshots of their grades and things like that. So I let them know, like, what's going on, what bars you have to reach, and if you are not meeting those bars. But that's what I said. Like, they have to be able to accept those kind of things. And a lot of the times when I see students in the streets, they want to say hi to me. They don't run from me. Like, when I was in high school, if I saw one of my teachers walking down the street, I might try to hide. I might try to be like,
hey, the other way, right?
Let me get out of here. I don't want to see that guy. So when they see me, they're like, hey, how you doing, Mr. Doug? And that's another reason that they respect me. Like, oh, like, he's in my neighborhood. He's accessible. He's someone I can talk to, and he hasn't left. He's still here trying to understand, like, how can we all move forward?
And Doug is a perfect example of this. He touched on it a little bit earlier, meeting the students where they're at. You know, Doug, another teacher, Frankie, you know, they would go out into the community and knock on doors, but not tough love, just like, hey, what's up, you good? You why you not coming to school? Let's go to school together and let's talk about it in the office. Let's see what we can do to have you pass this semester. Come on, we could do it together. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So that, you know, right there is perfect.
Let's take another short break, and we'll get back to our conversation talking about El Centro de Estudiantes. It's a school here in Philadelphia for kids who have struggled in other schools, trying to get them through that high school education, get them a diploma. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. Do stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscowane, and we are talking with WHYY's Kevin McCrory's latest podcast, Schooled. He takes us inside El Centro de Estudiantes for students in Philadelphia who have dropped out of school, are facing a whole host of academic and other challenges. And we are also talking with one of the graduates, Ryan Rivera, also one of the teachers slash advisors, Doug Cox, and David Bromley joining us now, executive director of Big Picture Philadelphia, a national organization which runs El Centro. And David, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You've been listening in as we've been talking about your school, if I can put it that way. What is the goal? What is the mission? Big Picture has been around for, what, 10 years?
So Big Picture Philadelphia is part of the national network, Big Picture Learning. We have about 70, 80 schools around the country and other schools around the world. And it was started in the mid-1990s with the goal of, we got to rethink how we're doing high school and really re-asking that question, like, to what end are we investing time, money, energy, these students' lives, and what are we really trying to accomplish? What should a graduate look like? We didn't really think that the standards-based kind of trajectory of where education was going was appropriate.
Why not? And I guess standards-based are those tests, Keystone tests, other tests, for instance, in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and I think, like, listening to Ryan and Doug talk in the early part of the show, it's like you can hear that the pieces that – you know, I think part of Ryan's story is that the reason he's been successful is because he learned how to advocate for himself. Like, where is that in the standards? Like, he learned how to connect with adults. Where is that in the standards? And we would argue that those kind of skills and understanding oneself, understanding one's passions are more, frankly, mm-hmm. important. I was a social studies teacher, but those are more important skills, frankly, than memorizing a lot of the stuff that we ask kids to memorize in social studies classes.
But is it either or? I mean, why can't
it's
we
not,
have both?
It's not an either or. It's definitely not an either or. But we believe that the range of academic skills and standards that we think are important for in 2019 probably aren't totally appropriate. It's not wrong to ask for a standards approach. We just think maybe the standards are a little twisted.
Ryan, you want to say something? Go ahead.
I mean, and if I can say something to what David is saying, you know, I love history, right? I know that there have been five presidents assassinated in our history, right? Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy, William McKinley, James A. Garfield, right? But how has that helped me in life, right? I can't take that to work with me and get a pay raise, or I can't get a job with knowing that knowledge, right? So advocating for myself and being able to communicate with people on an adult level, right, in the workforce, is what helped me. And El Centro helped me do that. Because before that, I didn't know what I was going to be or what I was going to do.
No argument for me about people's skills. People's skills will get you through life the way other skills won't. But you're a teacher, Doug.
Yes.
I mean, you want your students to understand algebra.
Oh, yeah, pushing the envelope, definitely. I also think that I want them to have you want a deep dive on that. So our project-based learning allows for students to take a deeper dive into a concept. So if you've been not great at mathematics, you need multiple approaches to the curriculum to make you feel comfortable. And that's really what I try to bring to mathematics. I try to basically make it something that's fun, right? And then weave in what's appropriate. Like, you know, in video games, how to use mathematics and parabolas to be able to make the grass in an animated movie, or things of this nature. So there's so much technology. We need access to the technology because our students are so advanced, right? You know, and we really
advanced
need,
meaning they're older.
They're 10 steps ahead of me on technology, and gotcha. And like showing me how to use the iPhone and certain things you can do on your iPhone to make you, you know, a creator, make you someone who is actually doing stuff in the world, and stop consuming and also making something on your own and pushing on your own. And I think that we really give that, you know, student sense of ownership over their education. And that's something that I think is missing. Like my daughter tells me in her school, I wish I could go out into the real world like your students do all the time. It sounds so interesting. You're actually getting into the field that you might want to do.
Go ahead, Kevin. Yeah, and then I want to play another clip from
what's
from
really
school.
Interesting here, right, is that if we take a step back and we talk about, okay, so what has the state or what has the country decided is important in education, right? And you can say, okay, we've decided that math and English and biology and chemistry and history, these are the important things. We've ratified them. We've set up the whole system around them. We train teachers to do those things. We have standards. And then we say, this is what it means to be able to graduate out of this system. You've become proficient at doing all these things. And there's a tension rubbing here because maybe those things aren't the things that really are important in life. And so you have a school like El Centro that is emphasizing that while existing in the larger system that says, no, that is what we want. We want you to say that everyone is proficient in math and English and biology and chemistry and history. And if you're not doing that, then what are you doing?
Well, let me play another clip. And this is from Schooled. And this is Donna Cooper. She's been a guest on Radio Times a bunch of times, executive director of the Philadelphia-based nonprofit Public Citizens for Children and Youth, also worked in the Rendell administration on education. And here she is discussing some of her issues, her problems with a system that doesn't have clear standards for achievement.
I'm not a fan of giving students who are years and years and years away from what we think would be an 11th or 12th grade standard of education a diploma, because they realize when they're young adults that they've basically been screwed. I was given a diploma, but I don't know anything. And that creates alienation in the system. It creates a lack of belief in the institutions.
What do you say to that,
yeah,
David Brahman?
So, and I have tremendous respect for Donna Cooper. And
she cares deeply about
children. Yeah. And I mean, I would say that she said there at the end, like, they don't know anything. But I think that goes to what Kevin just brought up. I think it's not about we don't want kids just to be empty vacuums. Like, at the end of the day, if they're passionate about writing and they're good writers, that's going to take them a long way. We want our kids to all be good writers, and we got to get better at that. Right. You know, they have to know basic mathematical skills. They need to know and have access to college, and they're going to have to know certain mathematical skills. But it's a question. I mean, we deliberately take basically 2 days of the 5 days of the school week, and we ask our students and staff to work together to find opportunities on the real world internships where kids aren't just having work experience. They're actually developing projects and doing that. And by doing that, by making that choice, we're automatically saying that some of the traditional standards content is maybe not as appropriate for the kids when they graduate. It's not like we don't want them prepared. We just think that possibly we need to revisit what it means to be prepared.
Prepared for what? Doug, you want to say something, and then Kevin.
And just real quick, you know, my daughter passed the Keystones in ninth grade. So then you're telling her she has nothing more to learn in mathematics in high school. So that's another thing on the other side of the standards, because we're not just getting students that are below grade level. We're getting students that are actually very intelligent and basically just – you know, socially may not have gotten through something or something else happened. But on the high end of thing too, we really have to challenge. So I'm all about challenging people at the top levels, which is why I put them into activities like STEAM, where we go to Central High School, we work with robotics teams, you know, we go to the science festivals, we do things that's going to engage them with young people that are in special admit schools, so they see there's nothing different between you and a student that goes to a special admit school. Now, the only thing is resources, and that's what I'm saying. So if we have more resources to do some of the things we're going to do, I believe that the students would definitely get some more benefit out and value from what we're trying to do with our young people.
You go ahead, yeah, Kevin, then we got some comments here.
I just want to point out, right, so Donna's point about the standards and that conversation, she was the architect of this thing called you have to graduate, you have to pass the Keystone exams in order to graduate high school. Never went into effect, right? Right. We kept coming up to the deadline of that needing to be the case. And as they looked at what the scores were, what was happening in school districts all across the state.
Not just in Philadelphia.
In Pittsburgh, right? All across the state. So many people weren't passing that they said, there's no way we can enforce this because it's just going to mean that the graduation rate is going to go down. So what we have now is this system that says this is what's important to us, this is what we believe, but at the end of the day, not willing to actually put any teeth into it. So maybe there does need to be a rethinking of that, right? And even like the most accountability-based lawmakers in Harrisburg, you ask them about this. Okay, so like, where's the integrity in the Pennsylvania diploma? Hands off. Like, they don't want to engage in that question because it's too difficult.
Interesting. Ryan, you want to say something?
And just to say, right, so you look at El Centro, who goes out into the community and, you know, their motto is real world learning, right? You get the internships. And you look at someone who went to a traditional school, went to college, graduated college with whatever degree they got, right? And those kids or young adults who have a college degree are finding it hard to get jobs, to get actual employment, right? I know this for a fact. But you look at me and other students that went to El Centro or schools like El Centro that had internships in the field that they want to work in, it leads into their career, right? Like, for example, my internship actually led into my job. After graduation, I worked for them and still work for them. And so many other students at El Centro, it happened for them too, right?
Let me just read a couple of comments from some patient listeners here. Phyllis says, I think the mission of El Centro is great, but I'm wondering how we can extend this ethos to K-8. Mm-hmm. These are real formative years. And as you were saying, David, it's middle school where there can be the problem of kids dropping out.
Yeah. And so big picture around the country has, you know, the last 10 years started to look at that and started to grapple with some K-8 schools. I mean, when they started the first, it was really about a mission to reinvent high school and that connection to the workforce. But we clearly need to engage kids differently. I mean, most data shows that most people are not auditory, you know, learners. Most people don't sit in a classroom. Most people don't regurgitate the stuff back very well. And so those are school kids. And most kids in Philadelphia and across the state aren't school kids. And we have to rethink about how we're engaging kids, what's important, what we're saying is the appropriate, you know, skills that a graduate needs. I think Ryan's story of a student who shared bravely on the radio here that doesn't know his math very well, but like his story of what he did do to connect with the judge, to go out there, to land this job, to build these relationships, and now creating these forums across the city, bridging police with kids, is extraordinary.
Absolutely. I mean, no question about it. I guess taxpayers pay for public schools, and we want something for our money, for our investment. Right. Here's an email from Karen. I'd like to hear your guest observations on how the school as community rather than a typical institution. And Doug, that's something you were referencing, which is that's why you're Doug. You're not Mr. Cox, right? Right.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you see me as not part of the furniture and as a real person, that's really important. A lot of the times I had no conception of what my teachers did. I thought they were like aliens. When I graduated college, I was mopping floors, and the guys that I was mopping floors with, they're like, hey, what's up, college boy? You know how to mop a floor? So I really think that what were people telling me in my first interviews was, where's your practical experience? So you go through 4 years of college and it's like, you're supposed to have an internship, and things like that. So now they're bringing the internship back to the high school level. And I'm like, wow, this would really have been beneficial for someone like me who doesn't do good in a big institution, but better in a smaller environment where I'm able to excel.
I mean, it seems, Kevin, because you cover education, we're always trying to reinvent education. There's a new criteria.
Fads that come and go, and often it doesn't seem like we get answers to those big questions, right? I think David says it well today and in the podcast, to what end, right? And if we're not willing to ask that question up front, we're probably not designing the system in the way that we really need to.
Let me get Edwin from New Jersey to join us. Edwin, we're almost out of time, but go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
And thanks for all the work that the speakers are doing. Spent 23 years in education, and I guess my big question, and you just talked about it, is somewhat of the initiative fatigue that is going on. And I think sometimes when we have these discussions, there's this view that education is in fact broken. But I think that, having been through this for 23 years, I don't see the hard, fast brokenness of education. And I always just point to all of us who are products of our education system. I mean, we're all here able to talk about this.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And just because you said that, I have to say to our listeners and to our guests, I was not a good student. I dropped out of college. I mean, I was not a good student, just to sort of add to that. But this idea of initiative fatigue, you nodded your head, David.
And I don't think education's broken. I think it needs to get better. And I think, this has been so overly stated, but, we're still driving across our country an education paradigm that is based on a different kind of economy. And I think education is broken for our most vulnerable kids around this country. I don't think we're preparing these kids. I think we're asking them, we've been talking about that, to do the wrong things for preparation. These kids have got to know how to interact with adults. They've got to have good communication skills. They've got to have problem-solving skills to compete in today's economy.
Yeah, and I grew up in Germantown, in Mount Airy, in a co-op, right? So my mom had me eating seaweed, and now I lived in Korea.
I never did that to my kid, Doug.
Eating seaweed. Oh, I did carob-covered peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
No chocolate. There. My mother was not about any kind of sugar. I was always trying to find sugar. So what that was it put me into a foundation where I was able to experience a lot of things, and I think that's so important. With tennis, with soccer, and with seaweed, my mom changed my life with those three things. And that's your original teacher, is your mother or your parents, or some of the closest one to you that can lay that foundation for you.
Ryan, I'm giving you the last word. You got 12 seconds. Go ahead.
Really quickly, just to say, being a product of, education and just being a student but not a teacher, I don't feel like education is broken, but it has had a massive heart attack, and we need to get this body right and get it together, because if not, education will die.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to meet you and have you on the air, Ryan Rivera.
Thank you. Shout out my mom, my friends.
There you go. Former student from El Centro de Estudiantes. And he works at the First Judicial District of Pennsylvania as a judge's assistant. Doug Cox, thank you very much as well. Nice to meet you
as well.
And again, he is a math advisor at El Centro, and also advises the school's chess club, the Dark Knights. David Bromley, executive director of Big Picture Philadelphia, a national organization which runs El Centro. Thank you for coming in. And Kevin, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
So great to be here, Martin. Thank you.
And his new Schooled podcast has dropped, and it's all about El Centro de Estudiantes. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you for joining us.